I saw this older couple in Mall of America, mm-hmm. and they're an older couple, and they both had to vote yes. And I walked around the corner, and I was wearing a dashiki, and I had my toenail painted green, and I forgot, and I had this in my ear, and I looked at them, they looked at me and went, huh. I just turned and walked away.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we have a great conversation with Tony Miller about his history with the Mennonite Church, the gay marriage amendment, and Tony answers our five questions.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. This week we are back in the beautiful trailer studios, and we are here talking with my friend Tony Miller, who plays Seamus the Insulter at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. I should introduce myself. I'm Tim Wick. I'm one of your hosts. Also here is Nick Glover.
Hi.
And Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tony, thanks for joining us this morning.
It's been my pleasure.
Already. That's great. That fast.
Easy to please.
Well, so far, don't push it.
So, Tony, how long have you been playing Seamus the Insulter? I know you took a break, but when did you start, I guess, is a better way of saying it.
I started in 1987.
1987.
Right.
So... on and off.
On and off for almost 20 years now.
What festival did you start at?
The Colorado Festival. Okay. That was my home fair. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you ever travel the circuit?
Before that?
Since then, in your time as Seamus the Insulter.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. I've been full-time on the road for 19 and a half years.
Awesome. Wow.
Right.
Yeah. One of the reasons we asked you on, obviously, you share our opinion on theism, but also, we learned that you were raised as a Mennonite. Is that correct?
Yes. I was born into a Mennonite family. My mother was Amish and my dad was Old Order Mennonite.
Okay.
And so I was raised in the Mennonite church and, was a Mennonite until I was 32 years old. And then I, basically wrote a letter into our regional conference secretary and formally withdrew from the Mennonite church and then 3 years later from the Christian church.
What is it that made you decide to withdraw from the Mennonite church first? Like, it seems like 32 is an older age, mm-hmm. for that. It wasn't like something that came upon you as soon as you had your freedom from the family. So what changed your mind about it?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
Primarily, what originally started my travel away from the Mennonite church was, at the time, their stance on women, ordination, homosexuality, and divorcees. When I was a child, divorcees in the Mennonite church could not have communion. And so when my sister divorced, suddenly that brought it home. But when I got into college, what really started getting me away from the Mennonite church as far as their ideology and their theology was their stance on homosexuality. And when I started doing a lot of martial arts, I was exposed to different philosophies.
Sure.
And when that happens, you start looking at your own through the lens of other religions.
Uh-huh.
And then you start to find that, oh, we just make it up as we go along.
Right. And there's a lot of spirituality in a lot of martial arts as well. I can see how they would come together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some martial arts, yeah.
Yes.
Some are straight up tied to religion. Some are just not very at all. Yeah.
Some are sports oriented.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Some you might argue, rather than religion, are more have a philosophical...
Philosophical is a better, I think any solo sport, like I run long distance, and I think any solo athletic activity that requires that much physicality, I think you get into your own head space, which just leans to reflection, you know, and I think that can be, you know, some people see that as spirituality, I just see that as, you know, my own time, but it could be either way, I guess.
It's, we've examined, the three of us, our own backstories in trying to figure out how we're going to do this podcast, what we're going to talk about, and each of us has had this moment where we kind of went from maybe like a Christian background, Catholic or Lutheran or whatever, to being, you know, full-blown atheist. There was like a dabbling in other things to try to find what fits. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right, that exposure to other beliefs is a lens just to examine your past and your own beliefs. And you become more critical of it, or your eyes are opened up to you know,
I think there's a lot of stages. If you're raised in this particular instance, a Christian background, there's a lot of stages. First, there's questioning, mm-hmm. and then there can be anger.
Yeah. Yes.
On what you were raised with,
mm-hmm.
not really fitting with not only your emotional interstate, but also what's going on around you as mm-hmm. far as women, LGBT issues, just a host of issues.
Yeah.
And eventually there can be an acceptance of that religion, or there's a continual exploration. I've made my actually a life study. I've studied all the religions. I've read the Quran. I've read the Talmud. I have gone through the Bhagavad Gita. I can't even pronounce that one.
Bhagavad Gita?
Bhagavad Gita. Thank you. So I've studied Zen Buddhism. Mm-hmm. I've looked at Shinto. I've looked at Aboriginal religions to find what are the similarities. What is some of at their core? You know, Confucianism, Taoism.
Sure. Yeah.
I've studied all of those. And eventually you get to the point. I actually haven't been an atheist. I've only been an atheist for about 4 or 5 years.
Oh, okay. Oh.
I moved into agnosticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
And then by the time I hit 50, I suddenly realized that,
Are you out as an atheist, like to friends and family? Or is
Okay. And that's been an ongoing issue. My sister is Mission Baptist, so...
Oh. She went the other direction from Mennonite. Like she really went,
She went hardcore fundamentalist.
Interesting. And, interesting.
Now, there are a lot of different, I was reading a little bit up on the Mennonite church this week, and there are a lot of different sects within the Mennonite church. And some of them, if you leave the church, you basically abandon your family. It was
like Mormons kind of sometimes.
It doesn't sound like this is you came from that kind of background. Were you able to maintain contact with your family when?
My family and I are very close.
Okay,
That's good.
It's been an issue, you know, there's tensions there, but there's some things we just don't talk about. You know, my family, by and large, well, actually all of them, except for my nephews and nieces now that they're getting older, but my family by and large is way to the right when it comes to political leanings, religious believings and stuff. So we just don't talk about those things.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving, Christmas gatherings. Right. Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, being a mature adult is... Sometimes, I mean, it's realizing that there are differences that will... You're not going to change someone else's mind. They're not going to change your mind. But you can still get along. You can still love each other. You can still be a family. You can still be friends. I have friends that I disagree with on a lot of things that are very important to me and very important to them. But we're mature people. We can get past that.
Yeah. That's the ideal. When you come from a proselytizing background...
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's. I look at the world as a big Venn diagram.
Hmm.
So if you picture the whole circle, the whole field, is in within that field, there's little tiny fields of different religions, thought, beliefs, stuff like that. But unfortunately, sometimes in proselytizing religions, their little field is the only field.
Yeah.
There is no room for other fields. And as such, being proselytized to by members of your own family sometimes is a little distressing.
We've had that. Yeah. We get that sometimes. I mean, my family, my uncle is a Methodist minister, but my family is very, we don't really talk about the religious stuff. I'm very outspoken atheist and don't, you know, everyone knows that. And Nick too and his family, but he has a lot of Lutheran ministers in his family. He's got one aunt that's very like Minnesota farm, like super Jesus-y, that sometimes we'll get a little lectury about it, you know.
Yeah,
you say super Jesus-y, and I envision this J on her shirt.
And it's
make sure you have the glitter.
She's a crusader for the Lord.
my mom came out when I was 12, and so her sister is.
By came out, you barely, came out as a lesbian, as a lesbian. Not as an atheist.
Okay, good.
No, it's interesting how the terminology is very similar.
Yeah, she is an atheist as well.
Yeah.
But,
she's an atheist.
She is. She said that. Yep.
She's just not as outspoken about it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to her. Maybe apatheist might fit better.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. But my aunt begrudgingly accepted as the best we could ever hope for. Mm-hmm. And which is, I have my aunt, their other sister, came out. I mean, she's always been gay. I remember being she's always been out, I should say.
Okay.
My earliest memories of my Aunt Robin are her and her partner, and that's what it's always been. And the fact that my mom came out after that, seems like it shouldn't have been a big fucking deal, because that's already something that they're exposed to. But it was a big fucking deal for that aunt.
Mm-hmm. You say that you've studied lots of different religions. Do you feel, I think I've noticed this, but it seems like lots of atheists have done the same, like are more versed in the Bible and are more versed in like different religious books and like what they actually believe. And do you think that study lends one to being an atheist more? Like once you see everything and you read all the different sides, that's what helps you realize that none of it could be right over anything else?
I think every atheist, anyone who discovers and puts together a philosophical or ethical underpinnings of their life, if you're willing to do that, you have to explore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And does that lend to atheism?
Yeah.
For myself, it did.
Sure.
I don't know what other people's journeys are.
I would love to.
I don't know. I think one of the things that I always notice, especially in people who are exceptionally dogmatic, is that there doesn't seem to be any desire to explore. Yeah. There's that. And the teachings of the church are such that it discourages exploration.
Yeah. I would love
it, to. It encourages you to remain within that Bible study or whatever they do so that they can continue to indoctrinate you with what they believe. They don't want you to look at what other religions believe. Now, I don't believe that that's because they're afraid that you will leave the church. It's because they honestly believe that that is what they're supposed to be doing. But I do think
it doesn't perpetuate the church.
Well, I don't think it necessarily drives you to atheism when you start that exploration. I think it's harder to find your way there unless you start that exploration.
Really more of an agnosticism than atheism.
Are you familiar with Unitarian Universalism at all? Have you heard? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's my background from junior high or whatever up. Mm-hmm. And part of their youth education is, we went to the Zen Center, the Zen Buddhist Temple in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. We went to a Jewish community center and Jewish temple. We were allowed in a Muslim temple and to be there and to be there for their services and their worship.
They call them mosques.
At mosques, right. and talk with all these different people of different faiths and have them tell us what they believe, and we were able to ask questions, and it was a very respectful thing, and it was totally education based, and I feel like that kind of exposure is good. Just for tolerance and for opening your expanding your experiences and all that, I wish that was more common.
Well, actually, it was in the Mennonite Youth Fellowship that I was in when I was 13, 14. We would go visit someone else's church, Jehovah's Witness, Jewish temple.
Sure.
In the early 70s, there weren't any avowed Muslims in Colorado Springs. It's a heavily militarized city.
Sure.
Yeah, military. Because the Naval Academy is in Colorado.
Actually, Air Force Academy.
Air Force. I'm sorry. I should know that.
It's okay. You know, Colorado's in the middle of the country.
No, I've got family members who have gone to the academy, and I'm anyway.
But we actually had interfaith, so they would come to here. The youth and one of the ministers would come to us, and then we would go to them. We'd ask questions. That was very good. Getting back to an earlier statement that you did as far as indoctrination, my sister, her children go to this thing called the Summit, and it's a quarter-long thing where they basically learn how to defend their faith against what they perceive as
3 months?
Quarter 3 months.
Wow.
Against the five main thought processes of the world, you know, humanism, atheism, communism, and I can't remember the other two, but I read their materials. It's pretty intense. It drives me. Yeah. One of my focuses.
It's kids.
Well, no, they're young adults.
Okay.
It's before they go off to college.
Still.
They go through
it. That's
kids.
It's at a very impressionable
age.
That's
kids.
It is kids.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah, when it's.
And it's a hermetically sealed world because they are raised in a homeschool, a mission Baptist environment. Mm-hmm. And everything is through that lens. I get that. And, you know, they're decent and wonderful and they're nice kids.
Sure.
And I love my sister, and she walks her talk. I respect that. But I never get that respect back.
Yeah.
And I think that's what brought me to this table today, talking with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, the whole do not do unto others what you do not wish to have happen to you was written by Confucius 500 years before it was attributed to Christianity.
Yeah.
That is at the core of any ethical underpinnings, be it religious
it's
or
the
not.
The golden rule.
It is the golden rule because it's at the basis of, I think, almost any interaction in any society.
Absolutely.
As such, if you want to believe in Zoroastrianism, or if you want to believe in prancing through the woods with antlers on your head,
yeah,
whatever.
Dianic Wicca.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's fine. You get, you know, if it makes you happy, if it helps you reach out to others, if it helps you be kind, yes, and help, and basically it's help others through life, being. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you don't get the right to inflict your views in everyday legislation.
Yes.
Yeah. Like
that whole legislating morality thing.
Oh my God.
Is we're on that slippery slope.
Yes. We are.
Yeah,
we are absolutely way down that slippery slope.
We're halfway down, yeah.
And there, yes, are, there are, and the, there are a lot of atheists and humanists right now who are fighting that very hard. I mean, well,
we talked about this with Ron Bauman from the Tortuga Twins, was saying that, you know, we have to really not underestimate the opposition, and being the opposition being the people who are doing this legislation of morality, specifically Christian, I mean, in America.
In America.
And this idea that, you know, we don't have, I mean, the percentage of atheists in government versus the percentage of hardcore fundamentalist Christians is an astonishingly scary ratio. And we need to figure out a way, I think, to try to mobilize that more.
It's one to a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a little cynical in this area because I believe in Rudyard Kipling when he says, what is that five-letter word that beggars kings? It's power. I think if you're in politics, your religion is power.
I agree.
You use fundamentalism. You use Christianity. It's a great tool. Yeah. It motivates. Politics is to inflame the emotions. It's very rarely used to engage the intellect.
Yeah.
As such, what better way to engage emotions than to hit fundamentalist fears or evangelical
fears? And fear
fears
is the word. It's, exactly. It's, it's all about fear.
In Minnesota, there's two state constitution amendments this year. The vote for adding a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, which is already illegal, so I like to call it making it double fuck you illegal.
Or kick them when they're down.
Yeah, exactly.
And then voter ID.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those are, like, non-issues that have, they're clearly not for what they say. It's clearly not to prevent voter fraud. It's clearly
because
not.
There is no voter fraud.
Right.
Or hardly any.
Well, it's not to protect the sanctity of marriage, because there is no sanctity of marriage, and also it's already protected right now.
Right.
And
air quotes.
I made air quotes.
Yeah.
Looks great on a podcast.
Yeah.
Well, they're there to drive out the people who are going to vote conservatively, to get them to the polls on these other issues, to get them to vote for other things. And also, I mean, voter ID, if it passes, it'll discredit a lot of, you know, Democratic votes.
Potentially,
mostly.
Yeah.
Potentially. So it's obviously, like you're saying, manipulating people with these, with their faith or
fear.
Beliefs with fear.
It's,
and it's a tool. It's a tool. Yeah.
Fear is a remarkably powerful motivator.
Absolutely.
It is. Yeah. Well, there's also been a good point, sorry for interrupting, but there's been a good point as far as the reason we're seeing a lot of fear-based motivation right now is because I think, and I agree with some friends of mine, that this is a backlash by the remaining people in power, the older, white, wealthy people who are seeing younger generations, including evangelical children, who are a lot more tolerant on LGBT issues, on who are a lot more pro-environment. So what we're seeing is a kind of a clampdown because they're seeing the change coming.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, with these laws, the over 435 laws against women and their contraception rights.
I can't even.
That could be hours of and then the whole LGBT issues, you know, they stir up a lot of things. A lot of legislators stir up a lot of these things so that people get really wound up because change is coming.
Well, I think I've talked about this a lot, but the reason the constitutional amendment is happening is because, yes, gay marriage is illegal in the state of Minnesota, but it's really easy to get rid of a law. It's a lot harder to get rid of a constitutional amendment.
And they know that.
And these people know they're losing. I mean, right now, I want to be optimistic, but I'm reasonably certain that their amendment's going to pass. It's 50-50 right now, and usually in these kind of polls, there's about a 5% group of people that say they're going to vote no, but really don't mean it.
Are you talking about that poll that they just took that only polled 500 people?
I'm just saying most of the polls I've seen, it's pretty balanced.
I haven't seen any poll that polled more than 500 to 600 people at a time.
Most of the polls I've seen are pretty balanced, and while I want to believe that it will not pass, there's a decent chance that it will. If it does, the whole reason is because it's a lot harder to get rid of a constitutional amendment than it is to get rid of a law. And they all know, they're not stupid. They can look at the polls. They can read the poll numbers. And they know they're losing ground every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every year they lose ground, which means 5 to 10 years from now, one of those amendments is not going to pass anywhere except in a deeply, deeply dark red state.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you could not pass it in anywhere in on the East Coast. You won't be able to pass it on the West Coast. I think in the libertarian West, you probably won't be able to pass it. They know that. They know that their numbers are slipping away. And so they're trying to put this thing into as many constitutions as possible before their window of opportunity closes. Yeah. And that angers me because they're doing it specifically to fuck over a group of people now because they know they can't fuck
them
over.
It's their last chance to fuck them over.
It would be really...
That's a really good point.
If this doesn't pass, we'd be the first state to put it on the ballot that doesn't pass it.
I know.
That would be amazing. And I'm just real quick, to people who are listening, I know that most of the people, I'm hoping everyone who listens to our podcast is voting no, but by all means, please talk to everyone. Talk to people that you know.
I mean, if you're from Minnesota, if we have people who aren't from Minnesota, if you're from a state where one of these laws...
If this is airing before November 6th, please talk to anyone you know. Please just convince them. If they want to vote yes, don't vote. Just don't vote then. You don't have to,
On the constitutional amendment. A non-vote is a no-vote.
I think this just became our November 6th episode.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. Yeah. What's really so frustrating for me, and I'm from out of state, but Colorado in 1982 passed Amendment 2, which basically allowed people to fire any LGBTs, kick out of any rental agreements with no legal recourse.
No cause.
Well, it's okay to discriminate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, and so, you know, a lot of people boycotted Colorado, started with Hollywood, a lot of people boycotted, went all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court, and Colorado Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
All these amendments, and this is what, I try not to get too angry, because you can't live in anger.
No.
But this really pisses the fuck out of me, is we go out of our way to target a class of citizen who have to abide by all the rules but don't get all the benefits.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's discrimination.
Yes.
And yes, that word is used a lot, but this is going out of the way to target legal residents who just want to fucking live their lives.
Taxpayers.
And have a chance to love and live their lives the way they should, the way they can, and instead... There's a bunch of people who are using power manipulative tactics to come in and say, no, you disgust us, so we're going out of our way to write in discriminating laws into state and Romney and Paul Ryan. They want to, you know, we're going to put that as a plank.
Well, and
it's so frustrating to me.
And they're talking about, you know, well, if we get elected, we're going to put don't ask, don't tell back into the military. And it's like the military is like, we're fine.
Yeah.
Not only fine, they're better than fine.
Yeah.
They've got people who are happy now because they realize they're being accepted and they have to be accepted by...
Yeah. Isn't the woman general...
Yeah, there's a lesbian general. She just got made
first
general.
First woman general.
And it's not about happiness in the military, because the military could give, by and large, a good goddamn about your happiness.
Right.
They're looking at effectiveness.
Morale. Yeah.
But happiness is at least to effectiveness.
Right.
I really do think.
Morale.
If you are not happy, if you hate your every waking, if every moment of your life is a secret, you're not going to be very effective.
Sure. But that's the point.
Yes.
Now that there's no secrets.
Yes.
They're a lot more effective.
And I think that's a perfect example of why one of the perfect examples of why these people who are trying to discriminate against a subset of us are wrong, because they sit there and talk about how society is going to fall, and you can point to the military and go, you know what, they're fine.
Well, you know what's frustrating?
They're fine. Nothing went wrong when they did this.
Dogs and cats aren't marrying each other. People aren't marrying goats. Like, all that slippery slope, like, society will crumble shit.
Hasn't happened.
Proven wrong, because the rest of the world has gay marriage all over, a lot of it.
Like, with what you were saying with your sister, how, you know, these children being indoctrinated in this summit, and, you know, I mean, yes, your sister, you know, they're good kids, and, you know, a house of love if, you know... A very narrow-minded kind of love, sure. There's lots of people out there that don't have that love, just have a hate-filled, you know, focus. I find that disgusting. Mm. I find that fucking disgusting, and I don't think they should be allowed to do it, but I'm not trying to make laws that say they can't.
Right.
And that's the difference. And that's because their life ultimately doesn't affect mine as long as they stay the fuck away from me and I stay the fuck away from them. So I don't understand why people give a shit about whether or not gay people can get married. If they're not gay, like, you're not gay, I'm not going to force you to marry a dude if you're a dude and you don't want to. Like, it's just,
yeah, and it seems like
nothing to do with
there's
you.
There's that fear. It's like, if gay marriage becomes legal, I might have to marry a guy. or something.
Well, what did that one pundit say, that if gay marriage becomes the reason Republicans are against gay marriage becoming legal, because then they have to treat their boyfriends like legit.
Oh my God, I love it.
We could probably talk about this topic for 2 hours, but I think we need to move on to our five questions.
Yay, Tony, five questions.
Yes. This has been a great conversation. Yeah, thank you. Now, we have five questions that we ask all of our guests, and we did not give them to you ahead of time, and you haven't listened to the podcast, so these will be a complete surprise, everyone. This is going to be exciting. So the first question, what is the best movie that you have seen in the last 30 days? And it can either be in the theater or on video.
Paranorman.
Paranorman.
Nice. Yeah, all really right. like it. There's some few slower spots, but all the same people who did Coraline did Paranorman.
And I like Coraline a lot.
And it's dark. It's one critic said it should be rated PG-10.
Because I wouldn't take a
below 10-year-old kid
to
it.
I like that's good.
It's stop action, incredible attention to detail, really dark. Liked it a lot.
Yeah, in an alternate argument, I will point out my 7-year-old went to the movie and he really enjoyed it. So,
but he also likes a lot of darker kind of stuff, it seems.
Yeah, well, like my 7-year-old is less amenable to scary stuff than my 12-year-old. You can't scare him.
I heard it was kind of Adam's Family. Fun, dark, like the weird, lots of monsters, lots of weirdness.
Actually,
together.
In some areas, it's darker than Adam's Family.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right,
well,
I like it.
Yeah. Paranorman. There you go. Good suggestion. Okay. Nick, why don't you take the next question?
They're doing a hand gesture.
I forgot our second question. Oh, right. Sorry. Who's your favorite atheist character?
Wow. Stephen Fry.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry is a character.
Yeah.
There's no question.
I've seen his series with Hitchens.
Yeah.
In their debates against the Catholic Church. In the Catholic Church. And they
amazing.
owned the other guys. You should see it. You could just type in put in Hitchens YouTube or Stephen Fry and Hitchens together.
Nice.
And there's a series of debates.
I'll make sure there's a link in the show.
Oh, wow.
They trample them. It's
some of the best atheist response to theism I've ever seen.
It's like logic, reason, and
humor,
compassion, and humor. Yeah,
witty use of words. It's brilliant.
Yeah. What's amazing to me about those debates, though, is the people on the other side of the debate always say that they won.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, of course.
Fry's such a word nerd. I love
exactly
him speaking on Twitter and everything.
He's quite the, no pun intended, idol of mine.
Yeah, I love it. All right, so our third question is, what's your geekiest hobby?
My geekiest hobby?
Geekiest hobby.
We are geeks without God.
Yeah. Well, what is your definition of geek?
You answer
whatever.
The question.
When you're thinking yourself,
right.
Boy, when I do that, I feel like a total geek. Like, that's kind of
on my iPhone, and I live in a yurt, so I have an unpowered life, so my iPhone is my portal to the world. I have a picture of the Discovery rover, Curiosity, on Mars.
Uh-huh.
So there is a machine on Mars who took a picture of a mountain, transmitted it to this planet. I downloaded it on my little magic box. So every time I open up my little magic box, there is a picture of Mars on my box, and it is freaking amazing.
We do
about once a month. We do an episode called the Geeky Boner episode.
Yeah.
Where we just talk about the geeky stuff.
We just talk about the
stuff that we get a boner about. And a couple of months ago, my boner was Curiosity.
Raging hard on for Mars. It's so cool.
It's amazing. It's like the conquistadors in Florida. Like, they look and they see this tropical paradise, and they see this new land. And when we are there in that same spot, all we see is boring condos, and maybe one day Mars will be the same. Like, to us now, it's like this magical landscape, and there's bigger mountains, bigger than anything you'll ever find on Earth, and it's this foreign, you know, truly alien planet, and maybe one day that'll be not amazing to us.
Do you go out of the way to pee in people's Wheaties?
I just had
a boner here, and you're just like,
This is not Nick, it's Bob. We blame Bob for that.
Well, I think that's cool, too, though, that it's like something so amazing.
Yeah.
Like an iPhone. An iPhone to us, I mean, I take mine for granted, totally.
Right.
But, like, go back 50 years and show someone an iPhone, blow their fucking mind.
Not just 50 years.
Yeah,
15 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm 53 years old.
Oh.
Yeah.
Here.
And so I've seen all of this come up.
Yeah.
No,
and it is still freaking amazing.
I'm old enough that we didn't have cordless phones or computers even, or anything when I was a kid.
Yeah. Not even 50 years. Think this. My son Alex was born on the last day of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, and that was 1999. And in 1999, I didn't have a cell phone.
Me neither.
And my wife was home because she was pregnant and she wasn't feeling well that weekend. She'd been working out at the festival that year.
Yep.
She wasn't feeling well. Her water broke on a Saturday morning. And she had to call the one friend that we had out of the Renaissance Festival that she knew had a cell phone.
Yeah.
To have him get a hold of me.
Yep.
And now she could call every single person
yep.
at the Renaissance
yep.
Festival
yeah.
on a cell phone.
Yeah.
And I mean,
it kids took, even, like it, 13-year-olds with their own phones.
It took him X amount of time to find me, and then I had to go around and tell a bunch of yep. other people and talk to people before I left. And now, if the same situation happened, I would know in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And you could send a group
everybody,
text in seconds.
Everybody on the
yeah.
festival would know
yep.
in a couple of minutes.
Yep.
And so, I mean, that's just 13 years.
Yeah. It's pretty you know? Astonishing.
Yeah.
So the next question, which is going to take us in a completely different direction. What is your favorite sandwich?
We love gritty details.
Details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every year on my birthday, I have my mom and dad grill me one of our cows on the grill.
Mm.
So I have a local grass-fed hamburger with baby Swiss Amish cheese on a homemade bun.
Wow.
That sounds amazing.
Okay, that's a great sandwich.
How do you like your burger done?
Medium rare.
Yes, that's
the
correct
answer.
The burger's got to be juicy, man.
Especially if it was literally like just slaughtered. Like, why would you not? Why would you ruin that?
I actually was able to eat a burger within a day of its slaughtering.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
To all the vegetarians listening to our podcast, booyah! Yeah, there you go.
I am an opportunivore.
All right, last question.
What's the dumbest thing or comment or question you've ever received regarding your atheism, skepticism, agnosticism, anything in that regard?
That's a good question. It's along the lines of how can you have morality without religion? And my response was, I really honestly think that morality happened despite religion.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
That's
really
a great response.
That is a really great response.
Yeah, that statement bothers me just because, as we've talked about before, I'm not, I'm an atheist, and yet I'm not killing someone because of God. I just think killing someone's wrong.
You're not butt-humping poodles in front of children's school system.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
I was able to come up with a completely useful set of moral rules that fit what society feels I should have without having God tell me what they were. Or,
and
more specifically, having somebody who is theoretically the spokesperson for God telling me what they were.
Well, more importantly, like, because, you know, you're an ex-Catholic, and so someone could argue, well, but you were raised with a Catholic, that's why you have that, you know, your parents try. But now your son, though, raised atheist.
And my son,
your son,
has
would
his
never,
own.
Yeah, he has a he has
came
a moral
to that
code.
Conclusion on his own.
Not just, like, in terms of the big things, like, don't kill and don't steal, but down to the, like, it's not good to be mean to your friends.
Treat people
decently.
And you
decently. Shouldn't lie to people, and you should do as you're told and make good on your promises. The tiny little fine morality that matters day to day.
Yeah.
Religion is not the moral equivalent of the Red Army in Bosnia. Follow me on this one.
Yeah.
I'm liking this.
Right.
In Bosnia, when the Red Army was there, it kept down all those factions. As soon as it was released, all those factions went around murdering each other
in
their various names of religion. Ha!
Yeah.
And religion is not that way with morality. If you remove religion, morality still happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now, conversely, people say, well, religion has killed more than atheists. Well, that's not true. Mao Zedong killed more people in the history of our world than any other person.
Right, but he didn't kill them because he was an atheist.
No, he killed them because of power.
Right. People say
Stalin, the same thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, because once you start killing people, it doesn't matter what your belief system is. You've gone into, I'm so powerful, I get to kill people.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what. I don't care if it's religious based violence or non-religious based violence. Violence is violence.
Mm-hmm.
However, going back to religions or politics stirring up emotions, religion also stirs up emotions. atheism stirs up emotions because we're all get really fired up about our infringements on ourselves and a rational, kind society. There you go.
Absolutely.
There you go. I think that's a great place to end. Tony, thanks so much for joining us. I'm glad we could get you in with us this week.
Absolutely. It was really, really great to get to talk to you. I mean, like we said before we started recording, you know, Nick and I have seen you out at the festival for many years since but we've never actually gotten to meet, and it was really nice.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah.
So this has been Geeks Without God. If you enjoyed our podcast and you would like to submit answers to our 5 questions, you can send them to our email, either Nick, Molly, or Tim at geekswithoutgod.com. Please take a moment to go like us on Facebook if you haven't already. And thanks to all of you for listening. It's been a great experience doing this.
Goodbye from the trailer studios.
Bye.
Thanks to Tim Wick and Jeffrey Brown for our theme song, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and look at past podcasts at www.geekswithoutgod.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks, geeks without God.
And now we're all back to the Renaissance Festival.
Yep.